Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, February 19th. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about big ideas to make the healthcare system work better for its customers. That would be people who use the healthcare system. You may know them as patients or members. So today we're going to talk about how an unlikely coalition of healthcare groups wants to use the ACA to improve healthcare, a new report from Deloitte on how to bend the cost curve, and a new initiative that compares fixing healthcare to fixing leaky pipes in your house. That assumes they're not frozen. To explain it all to us today are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
Just hearing the phrase leaky pipes makes me nervous, Dave, but I'll work my way through it.
Okay. Julie, how about you?
Yeah, I find myself pretty obsessed these days with what so many people are going through. I mean, this week, obviously, everyone freezing in states that are simply not prepared for this weather pattern. So I'm pretty contemplative.
All right. Thank you. Now, before we talk about big ideas to make healthcare better for customers, let's talk about COVID-19 vaccinations, one of our favorite topics here on the Roundup. Dave, what's the craziest story you heard this past week that tells you how the vaccine rollout is going?
Well, Mary Smeach is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and she had an appointment to get her first COVID-19 vaccine dose on Tuesday morning. And of course, those of us in Chicago know we got almost 2 feet of snow on Monday night. So when she woke up, she put on 3 layers of clothing, a hoodie, a scarf, yak tracks, ice cleats, had a trekking pole, and walked 3 miles to Northwestern and walked the 3 miles back to get her COVID vaccine. So great story. But what impressed me about her column was she talked about the good vibes in the room where people were getting the shots, lots of laughter, lots of excitement. Some people even cried. And she made the observation that, like the others, how relieved she was just to get the vaccine and get some type of semblance of normalcy back into her lives. So I think we're all going through that to some extent.
Yeah, I would agree. Julie, how about you? What vaccine story this week made you roll your eyes?
Well, you won't be surprised. I have two. Actually, this first one is from a couple weeks ago. You probably heard it, but many people maybe haven't. Is Jerry, the guy from Chick-fil-A, manager of Chick-fil-A, who literally saved the day when the vaccination line grew out of control. And, you know, this guy's an operator. Chick-fil-A crushes process. So he quickly identified the process problem and fixed it. And all I can say is that we all need more Jerrys in this process. That's for sure.
You're here.
And the second is my 82-year-old mother, Judy, who lives in Palm Beach County, Florida. She went to the county fairgrounds to get her vaccine, which I was very pleased about. And she said they have a capacity to give 7,000 shots a day, but only 550 people were scheduled the day she went. So needless to say, we're having some big throughput issues.
Yeah, logistics, right? Yep. For me, it was a story about Governor DeSantis in Florida making a veiled threat to withhold vaccines from cities that criticized his handling of vaccine distribution. I mean, I think we may have a Trump Jr. on our hands here, so watch out for that. All right, let's talk about some of the latest ideas out there on how to fix healthcare. And I thought we'd break this conversation down into two parts, what the government can do and then what the private sector can do. Dave, you get to go first. Tell us about this unlikely coalition of industry groups that wants to use the ACA as the vehicle to fix everything that's wrong with healthcare. Who are they? What do they want? And more importantly, will it work?
Well, I'm still thinking about Chick-fil-A and Julie's comments because I heard in West Virginia they shut down a Chick-fil-A and were doing drive-through shots. So maybe we'll get those solutions faster than we anticipated. But back to the unlikely coalition, it's comprised of the following 8 heavyweight lobbying organizations: AHIP, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Benefits Council, the AHA, the AMA, the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, Federation of American Hospitals, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The most surprising sponsors, perhaps, are the two employer groups, the American Benefits Council and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that are often at war with the other six over the cost of healthcare. But they've come together with the goal of universal coverage and more affordable health insurance. So their goals are pure motherhood and apple pie. To read from their statement, Americans deserve a stable healthcare market that provides access to high quality care and affordable coverage for all. The coalition's proposal has six components that use, importantly, the existing ACA framework to provide health insurance for the 29 million Americans without it, and to make health insurance more affordable by beefing up subsidies and eliminating coverage gaps that occur as people's economic circumstances change. You know, for example, when somebody loses their job. The most interesting of their proposals, in my opinion, is the creation of an insurance affordability fund that essentially would create federally funded reinsurance for high-cost patients. This would allow health insurance companies to assess their financial risk more accurately and presumably drive down premiums. I've always liked this idea. Finally, the coalition's proposals are as important for what they don't address as for what they do address. As I said earlier, they're all about universal coverage and health insurance affordability. There's nothing in there about lowering healthcare costs. So the sponsors will live to fight another day on bringing down the cost curve. And that's where you'll see the Benefits Council and the Chamber, you know, sparring against the big healthcare lobbying entities.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, what do you think about the coalition's agenda? Who wins, who loses if they get what they want from the Biden administration and the ACA?
Well, you know, Jeanette Thornton from AHIP summed it all up for me in her quote, which I don't think is how she intended it. But she said, it's really all about the existing system and figuring out the gaps and issues. And I think that's really what this is all about. This group represents the interests of the current system. They don't want to see Medicare for all. And I think Medicare for all has been gaining in popularity, as we know. And this is a front to start really pushing against that. They don't want that greater government involvement. So here's a way to really support at least where the ACA is and how to tweak it and fix it. You know, some of the organizations in this coalition are actually fighting against Medicare for all in a different coalition. So there's all sorts of activity going on with these groups. Now, the second thing I think is that many of the proposals endorsed here have already been included in COVID-19 relief bills released by House committees this week or even passed by the House last year as part of shoring up the ACA. So there aren't a lot of big elements of surprise here in the principles they put forward, as much as maybe, as Dave pointed out, the highly unusual, you know, collaboration of this group. And I think the collaboration is great because it's exceedingly difficult to push things through Congress. So having a collaboration that typically fights with each other, be on the same page about some of these things, will actually make these things easier to address. And look, hospitals, doctors, insurers, they all benefit when more people have coverage. And as Dave said, that's what this is about. And, you know, the employers are pretty supportive for, I think, probably a few reasons. But, you know, one is certainly this issue around COBRA and the fact that they could get loans or subsidies to make sure that people can stay on COBRA. And, you know, the subsidization piece of this is huge and important to them. You know, I think with all these principles, consumers will win at the end of the day. But I'm just not sure that taxpayers will win.
And a lot of self-interest in the proposal. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I thought their focus on health equity was also really important. We found out this week that life expectancy for Americans declined a full year in the first half of 2020. That's bad enough, but for Black Americans, it was 3 years, and for Latinx Americans, it was 2 years. So we really need to address the inequity in healthcare delivery. I did a short piece this week on Martin Luther King Community Hospital in South Central LA, and that really became the epicenter of the COVID crisis or of COVID care last month, January, when LA County was absolutely besieged. And this is a small hospital, 138 beds, lacks a lot of the services that you would get at the bigger, more prestigious hospitals, 3 to 4 times its size. And they were handling more COVID patients than those. And they couldn't transfer their sickest patients to these more prestigious centers. They just refuse to take them. And as a consequence, in LA County, people from the lowest income group are dying at four times the rate of people in the highest income group. And some of that is due, it's a complex problem. Some of it's due to lifestyle behaviors and chronic disease. But a portion of it is due to just the fundamental lack of access to life-saving care for people that are trapped in these lower income neighborhoods. So I just put an exclamation point on the health equity focus of the coalition's report.
Hear, hear.
Good point, Dave. Thanks. Now let's talk about some ideas coming out of the private sector. Julie, Deloitte released a report that projected that national healthcare expenditures won't rise as fast as everyone thinks. You know, what's behind Deloitte's thinking, and do you agree with it?
We know Deloitte sees spending slowing in three ways. The first is they think that we'll see a $3.5 trillion well-being dividend, which effectively translates to the return on investment for all the tools and systems and protocols that we're implementing today that are helping consumers take a more active role in their health. The second is that they predict that health spending will shift from 80% care and treatment to 60% health and well-being. And we've all been talking about this shift from sick care to health management for years, but Deloitte says it's going to happen through the empowerment of consumers to actually be monitoring their health through technologies and sensors and things we're just starting to see adopted. And lastly, they think we'll see new business models driving 85% of revenue, which translates to complete change for today's incumbents. No more general hospitals, far fewer mass-produced drugs, and a major shift in how we pay for healthcare. So Deloitte cites six things that are drivers for this. So I thought I'd share and give my perspective on these. The first is data sharing, which is already underway and has just been accelerated by the pandemic for sure. And I completely agree that data sharing is going to make a huge dent. Second is interoperable data, highly related to number one, which received an enormous regulatory boost almost a year ago. And I agree, we're already seeing new sustainable business models emerging that will just accelerate over time as more data becomes available. Three, equitable access, getting back to Dave's previous point, which is really about the proliferation of virtual and retail care. And I couldn't agree more with the promise of these two innovations in our system. Number four is empower consumers. And this is where it starts to break down for me. You know, they expect clinicians to work well with each other, supported by health plans to coordinate consumer care. But they really believe that highly personalized health information is going to drive us as consumers. And I don't know. I think that there will be structural components in the incumbent landscape that really gets into different businesses and reacts differently to incentives that forces us as members, patients, or consumers to actually really get engaged. So you can tell there's a heavy consumer bent here. Number five is behavior change, which really means data science and behavioral economics, which I totally agree will have influence here, but I don't think it's as big a driver as Deloitte suggests. And number six is a scientific breakthrough, which is really about researchers using AI and data technology for trials, commercialization, you know, more focus on prevention and cure, cell and gene therapy advancement, streamline regulation, a whole host of things. And I agree with all of this. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it has a very strong consumer bent to what they're saying. But by 2040, we should hopefully see some relief.
Thanks, Julie. That's a great critique of their proposal. Dave, tell us about this new 1% Steps for Healthcare Reform project. Who's behind it? What's the plan? And do you think the plan will work?
Dave, I'll get to leaky pipes in a second.
Okay.
but let me make just one observation on Julie's just excellent report. Any marketer will tell you that the best time to change somebody's buying habits is after they've gone through a major life change. That's why we get inundated with offers after we have a baby or move to a new home or something like that. I think as a country, we've gone through one major life change with COVID. So the opportunity to drive change in consumer behaviors and bring about the kinds of solutions that Deloitte is talking about, I think is really almost unprecedented. So I'm excited by that. But anyway, back to leaky pipes. Mm-hmm. The 1% Steps for Healthcare Reform Project is the brainchild of Yale healthcare economists Zach Cooper and Fiona Scott Morton. I know Zach a bit from my friend Amitabh Chandra's Healthcare Leadership Council at Harvard. Like Amitabh, Zach is one of the rising stars in healthcare economics. Zach and Fiona came to fame in 2017 for authoring a study that blew the lid off MCARE and surprise billing for out-of-network emergency care. I'm pretty sure they needed security detail after the New York Times highlighted their study.
Right.
Investors then sued MCARE's parent Envision, and the company's stock price tanked. Zach and Fiona deserve a Purple Heart for their work on surprise billing. But the 1% Steps project identifies a range of solutions that address specific components of the healthcare system's misfunction that individually drive up costs by 1 to 2%, but collectively create as much as a third of the system or waste in a third of the system. These components are the leaky pipes, and economists are the plumbers who get to fix them. That metaphor comes from MIT professor and economist Esther Duflo, who won the Nobel Prize for economics. So in Zach's words, there's no one silver bullet for fixing healthcare. There are a series of discrete problems like surprise billing that policymakers can address with discrete solutions. To date, the 1% Steps project has 16 research-based policy briefs that they support. These policy briefs are collectively authored by 25 healthcare economists, a lawyer, and Peter Orszag. Remember him? Now an investment banker at Lazard. He was Obama's first OMB director and had a major role in crafting and then advocating for the Affordable Care Act. To wrap it up, to paraphrase Everett Dirksen, a percent here, a percent there. Pretty soon we're talking real healthcare reform. That's what the 1% Project thinks, and I wish them much success.
Incremental but targeted solutions. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Yeah, I'll just say that, as we all know, our industry is famous for boiling the ocean. These proposals are a beautiful description of, you know, what really can be done with today's world and not tomorrow's world. And that's what's probably most important to me.
Thanks, Julie. Now let's talk about next week. Julie, what's on the healthcare docket for next week that we should know about?
Well, you know, I think we're going to start to see more headlines again about things that we don't like to think about: depression, suicide, addiction, all of it. I'm just stunned that we're having a winter like this. After everything we've gone through, it seems like it's just piling on.
Maybe we're getting it all out of the way at once, right?
Maybe.
Let's hope. All right, Dave, what's the big healthcare story we should be watching for next week?
Well, I think we're going to mess with Texas in terms of trying to restore normalcy there. I do think because of the storm, we've seen disruption in the delivery and administration of vaccines, and the manufacturers are continuing to produce them. So I'm hoping that we'll see a bump above the 1.7 million shots a day because as the supply chain reorients. At least I hope so, since my friend's bot will be patrolling to help me get a vaccine appointment. And hopefully there'll be more slots than there've been up to this point.
Great. You'll have to update us on that each week to see how that's working out. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Julie. Great discussion. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.